Hi, my name is Juliet, and I'm the host for this podcast. I will be ordained as a rabbi this coming January, and one of the things I love about Judaism is connecting the Torah reading with contemporary life. I think that's the most important thing we can do with our ancient religions when we want to keep our traditions going, and yet we wrestle with them. So in Judaism, there's a specific Torah portion for every week of the year. And as we go through these readings week by week in order from the beginning of the Torah to the end, we start at the beginning of the Jewish New Year to the end of that year, which is coming up in the fall. We analyze the stories and we comment on them. By connecting these stories to contemporary life is how these ancient stories come alive. And I hope you will accompany me as I tell these stories of Torah and of my life and the lives of others. And if you miss an episode, you can always go back and find it wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for coming on this ancient and contemporary journey with me. And please visit my website, lenegditamid.us. That's LNEGDITAMID.us. To learn more about me and my journey through Judaism, how I ended up wanting to become a rabbi after leading a life of atheism. I'm available to lead services, Shabbat, holidays, chanting circles, for weddings, for funerals, b'nai mitzvahs, tutoring, all kinds of stuff. And your donations to support this work would be much appreciated, this work that I am doing here, right here and now. So today's episode, to Till Death Do Us Part, Fences and the current Torah portion. I know. So those of you who've been following know that I had a wedding this past week. My daughter got married just a few days ago on Sunday over Labor Day weekend. And maybe you saw the video of the ceremony on Facebook, maybe not, but maybe some of you are also waiting to hear how it all went. There was a lot of buildup to it. So first of all, it was wonderful. It was perfect. It turned out exactly the way my daughter wanted it and imagined it. So the best DIY, do-it-yourself wedding ever. We had it in the park, and then we had it at a party venue, and ordered the food ourselves, everything. A lot of work, but I think worth it in the end. It was really low-key and beautiful at the same time. Intimate and like, well, not so tiny, like 70 people or something like that. I don't know. Anyway, as all weddings, there's just a good bit of drama that comes before the weddings. And over the past weeks, over the previous weeks, there was definitely a good bit of drama in our family. Certainly there were family members who my daughter and her son-in-law and my son-in-law, I can say son-in-law now, felt like certain family members didn't care. And this manifested through things that they said and the ways that they behaved. And I'm not going to go into it because it's crossing the line of boundaries. And just in case somebody hears something that I say, I don't want them to hear it. So this drama played out partly by their ending up cutting all the traditional religious elements from the ceremony only 2 days before the wedding. It was crazy. But I ended up talking to my daughter. She called me and she just was like, oh, this person doesn't care and these people don't care and it's all going to be terrible. Nobody cares. And through talking and my listening, eventually these elements made their way back into the ceremony. And essentially the wedding was a Jewish one in the end, which kind of surprised me. Like, oh yes, it really did feel like a Jewish wedding with some Catholic elements performed in a traditional way, a traditional Jewish way, but with Catholic prayers kind of woven in a couple of places. And there wasn't much family participation, which was something that the interfaith minister was hoping for and wanted, but there was a question of who was going to actually show up and all the hurt feelings. And it serves them right if they're bored and they just hear the minister do it all. And that's really what they wanted. They wanted her to do the whole thing, to read those prayers, the Jewish ones, the Catholic ones. They weren't sure how she was going to feel about it, so they were afraid to ask, but it was like, hey, just ask and find out. Anyway, she did. And part of the thing was, like, the couple didn't write, my daughter and her partner didn't write their own personal vows, and this was something that they were asked to do, and they didn't want to. And it was really interesting. So in this conversation I was having with my daughter, and she was like, yeah, everything's back in, it's all exactly the way we want it. And out of curiosity, I said, what about your vows? No, she said, we want those, the old-fashioned vows, the kind you see in the movies, till death do us part, you know, I take thee, blah, blah, blah. And this had always been her dream. And boom, that was it. And I was like, okay, if this is your dream and it's a conscious decision, then that's beautiful, even if it's not a traditional Jewish thing. And I was okay with that. I just wanted it to be what she wanted, you know? So thinking about interfaith ceremonies, there are still many rabbis who won't perform an interfaith ceremony. And what they say is, what this phrase in Judaism that comes from Orthodoxy is, build a fence around the Torah. This is an ancient saying from Pirkei Avot. Build a fence around the Torah. This is what they say. We're supposed to protect Jewish ways from infiltration by foreign elements. I'm putting that in quotes, foreign elements and corruption. Keep it pure. And I've been thinking a lot about fences over the last couple of days since reading this week's Torah portion. And I thoughtfully made many choices leading up to and throughout the day of the wedding. And I came into it thinking about this, like, what are my boundaries going to be? What are the fences going to be that I put up for myself? And I wasn't thinking of it as fences, but I finally realized, like, oh, that's what it is. It's related to this idea of putting a fence around the Torah. And I realized on the day and during the ceremony, like, wow, how much stronger my personal boundaries have become. And I, one of the things that I talked to about my daughter and son-in-law was, look, the people who show up, they're the ones who are going to show up because they love you and they're going to bring the joy. And forget about all those, the couple of people that you're really hurt by, close family members that you think were supposed to act in a certain way, and forget about them and focus instead on the people that love you, the people that are going to show up, the people that are coming. If you listened last week to my podcast, you know that there I was going to have a lot of guests, a lot of, like, 8 people staying over at our house. And in writing and thinking about last week's podcast, it helped me get to a place of acceptance, and not just acceptance of having all these people come over, but joy, real joy at it, really getting excited. Like, I had to work it through because I was just so afraid of the negative part of it. And I really had to work through that. But working through it, I came out the other end like, oh my God, I'm really excited about these people coming over. And I'm really excited about feeding them all and having all this partying happening in my house. And I had to balance that with making sure not to exert too much energy, so much energy that it would send me over the edge. And if you listened, you know that I've struggled with chronic fatigue and having COVID twice and the way it has affected me. And so I was really kind of feeling in a very vulnerable place. So I had to really work on that and finding that balance. So I decided that I, you know, in terms of my boundaries, that I was, you know, people were like, oh, you know, oh, mommy, you don't have to get a whole lot of, just get a bunch of bagels and cream cheese. That's it. That's it. But I had this feeling in me that I wanted to do more. And I decided that I was going to wholeheartedly welcome this house full of sleepover guests, 2 of whom were doing my daughter's hair and makeup. And I was also going to welcome a last-minute sleepover guest. This was my son-in-law's sister. And boy, did that add something, because my husband had to go all the way out to Newark New Jersey on Friday night, late Friday night, after Shabbos dinner, get on the train, get on the bus, whatever it was, go out to New Jersey to meet her at the airport. And her airplane was supposed to land at 10 o'clock, and instead it was late and came in 2 hours later, so he didn't get to bed. He didn't get back until 2 a.m. And so this was a lot, you know, like, oh my God, so much, this is like so hard. And yet, it brought us so much joy, and I knew that it was going to bring my son-in-law comfort and love and joy, knowing that we were taking care of his sister. And I realized, like, before the wedding, after the wedding, I was like, oh, now I understand why this tradition of 7-day feasts, you know, feasting with weddings, you want to keep it going. And we had this joyful, wonderful time together. Friday night, my daughter was here with a friend, and my daughter stayed over for Shabbos because she doesn't travel on Shabbat. And then the next day, we had my son-in-law's sister, now my daughter-in-law, I guess. Now I have another daughter. Woo! and having all these special foods that I had planned for us to eat on Shabbat before the people even came, it was like, oh, we're starting the party. We're bringing in, we're getting ourselves primed for this wonderful occasion. And then we had some rest time. My daughter and I went, the younger one and I went to the park. She's the one who stayed over. We went to the park and we rested. It was a beautiful afternoon. And then suddenly family started coming and it was like, oh, the party is starting for this evening, pre-wedding party. And I loved, like, I had made this very conscious decision to go shopping, and I went shopping on my birthday, September 1st, to Zabar's, the famous Zabar's, to get a variety of all these Jewish foods that felt very celebratory. And I was going to serve them myself. And these things added to the festivities and made my guests feel welcomed and cared for, and it brought joy all around. And that's become my, like, that was my, my standard for thinking about boundaries. Like, what effects do these boundaries have? Even if it means being more tired in certain ways, is it worth it? Yes, it was worth it. Certain things were worth it. And the fact that these foods that I chose were typically Jewish, it was like what my mother would have gotten from Zabar's. And I felt like I was inviting her in. My mother died 4 years ago, and there was a lot of strife between us at the end. It was very difficult. And all through my marriage, very, very difficult. She made our lives very difficult. And in the end she apologized, but she could not accept my husband. And so it was a very difficult, there was a lot of conflict. And as much as I appreciated certain very special things about her, and I have very good memories, I also had these, there was a lot of anger to get over and a lot of resentment and regret because I didn't talk to her in her last year of life. And, so, you know, there was a lot to work through. But so I felt like, there's some healing that's going to happen here. I'm inviting my mother in by bringing this part of my mother that I loved, with this generosity when it came to serving food and making an abundance. And this felt like part of our family tradition. I think of it as Jewish tradition, but it's I think every culture has that, this generosity. You want to make sure that there's an abundance of food. And so there was healing there in doing that. And so that was going the extra mile. And then on the other hand, a boundary that I drew for myself to preserve myself was not to go too far, but I wasn't going to personally welcome certain uninvited family members who unexpectedly showed up at my door an hour before the ceremony was about to start. And I was like, what are they doing here? These are the people, or one of them was the person, the other people were not, who felt like they were not it was all about them. And I didn't want, I was like, no, I'm not going to take care of this person. And instead I said, I'm going in my room. I said, what the hell are they doing here? They should know better. They need to be in the park like everybody else waiting, and enough of this attention getting or attention seeking. And so I went into my bedroom and I lay down on the bed. I was all ready to go. And I was waiting for my daughter to come in to be ready to put on her dress. And I gave instructions to everybody else. And I said, somebody, okay, the other one, take them to the park, get them out of here. This is not okay. And I rested and I took care of myself for a few moments until my daughter came in. And it was a beautiful healing moment also. It was like representative of all this healing. I feel like there have been waves of healing that have gone on through this weekend, through this wedding and leading up to it. And then at the wedding venue where the party was, I continued to make choices that put myself and my husband at the top of the list of caring for ourselves, and not saying this is our day along with our daughter. It's really okay. We should not be sacrificing ourselves for other people that are demanding things of us that are inappropriate and might get in the way of our total enjoyment of this time with her. And so I chose to converse with those that brought me joy. And I didn't stop to take care of those who were isolating themselves in a corner, who have a habit of doing that. I always normally, like in the past, my personality was always, I have to take care of these people. I have to make the person who feels left out, I need to include them. And I was like, oh my God, I am not doing that today. And that could mean sitting and making conversation with them, or it might mean bringing them food, or it might mean, oh, I'm so sorry you have a headache, you know, what can I do for you? No, I was like, let them take care of themselves. Let them be grown-ups. They're all grown-ups. And I remember walking past certain people in those situations and circumstances, and I was like, oh my God, I'm not stopping. That was the old me. That person, the way they're sitting there, that was the old me, and I'm not doing that anymore. So that felt really good, like finding that balance. So I had put up some fences. And in Judaism, we're told to put a fence around the Torah, like not encouraging intermarriage by performing such a ceremony as a rabbi, right? And this week in the Torah, we have examples of women who are lusted after and then, quote, taken by men and then rejected. What to do? We have examples of newly married women accused of not being virgins by their husbands. How to prove it in one way or the other, and what to do with them. And we have examples of women whose husbands have died and what to do with them. And here I'm thinking, wow, this is my daughter just got married, and these are the circumstances that women had to deal with. And the worst part of it, of course, is that the answers mostly lie in favor of the men, leaving the women guilty or vulnerable in some way. The woman who is taken and rejected by her husband remains possibly cared for and most definitely unhappy. I mean, if you're rejected, you're not going to be happy. The test for virginity for the other woman is basically a medieval witch test. Well, it's an ancient, I shouldn't even call it medieval, but yeah, a witch trial, right? Catch 22, you're not going to win, right? And the situation for the widow, she's forced to marry her dead husband's brother. The dead husband's brother is forced to marry her. And this is obviously to keep the seed within the family. She should reproduce for, you know, she should give her husband children, sons through the same family. But it doesn't consider her feelings. It doesn't consider his feelings. It does leave her protected. I mean, if that's the point of it also, then that's a good thing, right? But if he refuses, her only option is to spit in his face publicly and throw a sandal at him. That sounds pretty funny, right? But I want to say that the desire to defend and protect a woman whose husband has lost his desire for her, one who's falsely accused of sex before marriage, or by forcing her brother-in-law to marry her, these must have been revolutionary ideas for their time. So good for them, revolutionary for their time. And other messages from this week's Parsha, like to provide for the stranger amongst us, to remember what it feels like to be a slave. These are universal messages of love, and they point to the sameness and interdependence of all. So there are cultural things, and then there's, hey, remember that we're really all the same. We get both of these messages. But we think about putting a fence around this and the laws that have come from this, from our Torah. And times have changed in many places, and some places we still remain, you know, in the dark ages in terms of treatment of women and, you know, their place and how many options they have. But thankfully, in most places or many places in the world, things have changed. And my daughter didn't have to worry about being a virgin or any of the other things mentioned above. And how lucky that she had the option to say, to till death do us part, not out of obligation to take care of him, but as a real choice of commitment to her own personal choice of a husband. And when we say that we want a fence around the Torah in order to protect our traditions, we must think carefully which traditions we are upholding and which need revamping. And if we stick to the Bible only as literal law passed down from God and a prophet through Moses, we do not allow for evolution. The same goes for our personal choices and boundaries. As we grow older, we can learn more about ourselves and our needs. And like the world, we evolve. One of the things is, you know, okay, so if a relative is mean to you and says cruel things to you, like you should lose weight, and obviously they themselves have struggled with the same thing, and they're just trying to make you feel bad, do you say, oh, but I respect that person, so I don't want to tell them the truth about how that makes me feel? Or do we stand up for ourselves? When does it become, you know, what kind of boundaries do we have around what people are and aren't allowed to say to us? What do we allow people, how do we allow people to talk to us and not? Where do we put up our fences? Though my daughter and son-in-law did not personalize their own vows by writing their own interpretations of what commitment means to them, and these vows are definitely not Jewish, it was a profound moment when I heard them each say, till death do us part. I didn't know that it was going to have that effect. It really was. It was like, oh, they really mean that. And I would be a hypocrite if I refused to perform interfaith marriages, especially having married someone myself who wasn't Jewish. Also, some things need changing and bringing up to date. So this fence around the Torah, we should not intermarry, that's always been a thing, and it's a fear-based thing. And the more, in my opinion, the more we do things like that, the more we exclude people and push them, we're pushing them away, the more we push them away from Judaism, it makes them turn away and never come back. Which is why when I had a rabbi who married us, it was very hard to find back in the 80s in the New York metropolitan area. It was probably difficult everywhere. I think there were 3 in the entire New York metropolitan area. And I asked him, why do you do this? If nobody else, if, you know, hardly any rabbis will do this. And he said, Because what I find is, and I believe, and I've seen it happen, is that when you say no to a couple, most likely they will turn their backs on Judaism and never come back. And if you say yes, there is much more of a chance that they will feel welcome, the Jewish and the non-Jewish spouse, they will feel welcome in the Jewish world, and they will decide to bring up their children in a Jewish way or expose their children more to Judaism, because they won't have that anger and resentment that they might have. And it turned out to be true for me and my husband. So this fence thing is a problem. And also, like I said, some things need changing and bringing up to date, like cultural norms that are more inclusive, from more exclusive to more inclusive. We can change. Cultural norms do change. We don't follow this thing of if your husband dies, then your brother-in-law is forced to marry you. Some people do, but that's a small minority. And other messages that we get from the Torah are more universal. They're timeless truths. And what are those? They're love, equality, inclusiveness. These are the things that bring us closer to the kind of world we want to live in. And in general, for me, what I've concluded is that a good test for boundaries, for my boundaries, is whether they bring more, or boundaries in general, is I ask myself, does this bring more generosity into the world? And likewise, does this increase joy and love within and around us? This is how I decide. Because generosity does breed more love and joy. And of course, I also have to take care of myself. So where does that start and where does it end? It has to be in the moment that I decide. So as we continue to do our personal work of Elul, getting ourselves ready for the High Holy Days, may we carefully consider the kinds of fences we put up and how high we make them, what fences we take down, and the effects these actions have for generosity, for love, and joy, or otherwise. What are the effects? To really think carefully about that. Shabbat Shalom. Thank you for being here with me. And please join me again next week. Bye.